Hoosiers getting a tax refund. Officials sound the alarm over the Delta variant. Plus, Eilern scores and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 16th, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, officials announced Hoosiers will get a state tax refund when they file their taxes next year. That's because the state finished the year with a lot more revenue than expected, triggering Indiana's automatic taxpayer refund. The automatic taxpayer refund was created a decade ago and only used once in 2012, sending a $111 credit to Hoosier taxpayers. After that, lawmakers made it harder to trigger. But in just the last 3 months, Indiana brought in $1.2 billion more than projected. Office of Management and Budget Director Chris Johnston says he never imagined the state would be in this strong a position.
I think we were cautiously optimistic, but to be having a taxpayer refund and at this magnitude, we weren't prepared for that.
The refund will show up as a tax credit when people file their taxes next year, and the exact amount per person won't be determined until later this year, likely around November. Is a tax refund the best use of these dollars? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ariel Brandy. Republican Mike O'Brien. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, I was a little surprised by how many people reacted to this in a negative way. So basically, I'm bringing their question to you, which is, should the state have spent this money before it triggered the tax refund?
What people are we talking about? Are we talking about legislators? Talking about people in government? Are we talking about...
I just heard from Hoosiers. Yeah, okay. I just heard from Hoosiers who were surprised and not happy about the idea of getting a tax refund that they thought the money...
They mustn't know how this budget came together at the end when, I mean, the General Assembly was frantically trying to spend billions of dollars in 72 hours or 96 hours in the last, like, few days of the legislative session when the latest forecast came out, right, to set the final numbers in the budget. They realized they got billions more, so they put a $1.9 billion increase into K-12. They set standards for teacher pay. They kind of do the wish list. Everybody that was in that budget won. We were watching, I work closely with the legislature, and we were watching line item appropriations double or triple in some cases from where they started in the beginning. So they were trying to spend this remarkable influx of cash that was a result of federal government investment. It was a result of sales tax being through the roof because of stimulus dollars that were coming in, people were spending that. So there were a lot of reasons that all this money came in, and now they have even more. And in the theory when Mitch Daniels passed this was the government should set its priorities, set its budget, build a healthy reserve, and then if it brings in more money than that, it should stop collecting it and return it to the people that get it. It's not the government's money, it's taxpayers' money. That was the idea. So when you have a budget like this that we just had, that is kind of a bonanza for everybody that was involved in it, it is like the poster child example for why an automatic taxpayer refund ought to be triggered and why it should be there to begin with. So I don't know what everyone's so upset about. They're getting more money or at least an offset on any kind of tax liability or an increase in their return next year. So everybody wins. The budget was way better than it has ever been, and now people are getting a little money back. Hallelujah.
I'll put it to you, the sort of the same thing. The folks I heard from were, instead of spending, instead of doing a tax refund that'll be maybe a couple hundred dollars at most for Hoosier taxpayers, they should be spending that $1 billion that it comes out to on roads and pensions and teacher salaries. Was there a better way to spend this money, or to Mike's point, was this just a weird confluence of events?
I do think that it was a weird confluence of events, for sure. We had all of this money that we were strategically trying to spend in all the right places. But the good thing is, even with the American Rescue Plan, I think that also was able to kind of save some of our cities and towns and how they were able to budget their money as well, even so. But I do think that for Hoosiers to be able to have a little bit of that extra money in their pockets for a refund, I don't see where there's a bad thing that comes out of that. But I do think that when we're looking at the budget as we move forward, when it comes to that spending, we should be strategically looking at how we could allocate that money a little bit more and better as we move forward.
So this is a case of we had this huge revenue forecast in April, right before they finalized the budget. And in the 2 months after that, $1.2 billion more collected than we thought. If lawmakers had any idea that we would have approached triggering the automatic taxpayer refund, would they have allowed it to happen?
No, and I know that for sure because I did a story in early April and after that basically saying, hey, are you guys considering getting us to the automatic taxpayer refund? And to a person, every budget official involved was like, no. You know, they literally socked money away everywhere they could. They had like reserve accounts on reserve accounts. And then
they created a brand new reserve account out of nowhere.
And then they took whatever was left and said, we'll put $600 million in pension. You know, it was literally whatever was left. So they wanted to prioritize that money where they did, and they did. They had no idea that this much money was going to come in like 60-some days.
When this taxpayer refund trigger was created by, at the urging of Governor Mitch Daniels about a decade ago, it was triggered once, and then lawmakers made it much harder to ever trigger again. Because they don't like the, they want to spend the money, they think they have a better, they have a better idea of how the money should be spent than just giving some, what ultimately doesn't end up amounting to a lot of money to individual Hoosiers. So does this prompt them to get rid of it entirely, or is this just so weird that they'll bank on it not happening again?
It is so weird that they'll bank on it not happening again. But beyond that, the optics of doing away with it now, even on the off chance that it did happen again, if you think they were uncomfortable in the old days giving themselves a pay increase, this is even worse than that. And so for that reason, I think they will just hope that this does not occur. You know, to paraphrase, Brandon, what you say at the end of each week's show, a lot can happen in an Indiana year. If you look back to the budgetary situation, certainly at the start of COVID, I think everybody would have said, we are going to be in a heap of hurt. We had to assume there would be some federal stimulus, but nothing to the degree that we saw. And even if we could have envisioned that stimulus, I don't think anybody realized just how much of an impact that would have, a direct impact in terms of sales tax and so forth. So nobody foresaw it, could have foreseen it, and I'm guessing now they're thinking it won't happen again. You know, I can't help but laugh, though. Again, if you go back, as somebody who's been around here a long time, people used to fight to give the money back, both parties. You know, yeah. Republicans say this is, it's been their calling card. Well, it wasn't always their calling card. Democrats were using this as their calling card. Whoever had the control of the governor's office in the General Assembly when there was a budget surplus, they were the ones who were reaching their hands into Hoosiers' pockets, and it's time to give it back. So who knows? In 10 years, we'll have a discussion when Democrats are in control of the House and Senate, and maybe the Republicans may call to...
One thing I'll say, though, is that a lot of people in the last couple of days since this was announced have asked me, well, did they use all that federal stimulus money to pad this in order... And they used $440 million from the CARES Act to pay the salaries of state workers who were doing COVID relief over the last year. Other than that, it's all indirect. Yes, there is definitely an impact because of the stimulus, because of how much...
It's not as fungible as people think.
No, it's not.
We're going to save the state dollar and spend the federal dollar.
Yeah, you really couldn't do that for the most part. So no, it wasn't built directly. They weren't padding the stats, if you will, using that federal stimulus money. Well, Indiana health officials say they are not planning any more statewide COVID-19 restrictions, even as they sound the alarm about a rise in cases related to the virus's Delta variant. Indiana's COVID positivity rate was reported at its lowest level since the pandemic began just over 2 weeks ago. Since then, the rate has more than doubled. That coincides with what State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box calls a significant increase in the Delta variant.
This is important because these mutations of the virus have been shown to be more infectious, more easily transmitted, and to potentially cause more severe illness than the original strain.
Box says the state is not, however, planning any new or renewed statewide restrictions.
but individual communities and consultation, schools in consultation with their local public health may decide to make different decisions based on the level of infection at that time.
Box says the best defense against the virus and its variants is to get vaccinated.
Ariel Brandy, what should the state be doing to help protect Hoosiers against this highly infectious variant?
Well, I think Dr. Box is, you know, very adamant about the fact that we should be getting vaccinated. We very much should be doing so. I think that that is something that our governor has agreed on and that Dr. Box has agreed on. And it's great to have a governor that believes in science and really wants to ensure that we're following what we need to, whether it's CDC guidelines or what have you. But it's unfortunate that this pandemic has kind of turned so political, especially when it comes to our mask mandates, the vaccination as a whole, but also just how we're talking about the health of Hoosiers. With the American Rescue Plan, we have been able to see that being able to have access to these vaccinations has definitely helped. But we know in Indiana that the cases are still rising and people getting vaccinated is not happening as fast as we should. So I think the encouragement of becoming vaccinated, and also if you want to wear your mask still, please encourage folks to do so. But until we get on a path of really hammering down the fact that we need folks to get vaccinated and we need to make this pandemic not political and about the health of Hoosiers, that's how we're going to get to the point of actually making sure that we're not dying from this pandemic, but that we're actually coming out of it ahead.
You, a few weeks ago on the show, you had a relatively memorable answer to a question about vaccinations where you kind of expressed, like, I don't know what to tell people who just aren't getting vaccinated. Is this perhaps the way we really start to push the number higher in Indiana? Is cases are going up, maybe it'll get more people out there getting the shot?
I mean, if the question is, what's the government going to do to protect people, it's what are people going to do for themselves, right? I mean, I don't know what to do. Again, back to my rant, I'm channeling it again. I don't know what to do with
you're
people when you look at a 99.4% of people that are hospitalized are unvaccinated. I don't know how you look at that number and go, still not sure. Fine, then be not sure. I'm going to lunch. You know, I'm going to be at a bar tonight. You know, like, continue living your life being unsure of the vaccine. But know that you are taking on that risk. And at some point, the government, again, this is what I talked about a few weeks ago, the government remarkably pulled every lever it could to leverage private industry, to get a vaccine to market. The vaccine is available. If this was a supply problem, if it was a healthcare network problem, that, you know, distribution problem, that people in parts of the country were just in blackout areas that just could not get access to a vaccine, that is one thing. That is not this situation. This is people who are clapping at the CPAC conference when the government's missing their vaccination rates, right? And they're celebrating the fact that that people are not getting vaccinated. Okay, I mean, that's fine. But at some point, the government's got to say, we kind of did our job, and everybody else can go back and live your life. You know, you're welcome.
Is there any chance that we see statewide restrictions of any kind in Indiana again?
Boy, I don't see it. I mean, look at we're still dealing with the ramifications, the fallout from the mandates that were put in place at the height of the pandemic. That's going to be sorted out for months, if not years, to come in courts and elsewhere. So I don't think there's a lot of appetite on the part of the governor, certainly not on the part of the General Assembly, even if they were to call themselves back into session, to do something on this front. I think Mike's exactly right. It comes down to common sense. The unfortunate thing is, if in fact large organizations or groups of people are not able to practice the way they want to because of other people's reluctance. So, and I'll cite our public universities as an example now. I would hate to see restrictions, sporting events curtailed or crowds limited or in-class learning and laboratories being supplanted yet again by video or telecommunications lectures, if in fact it's simply because some people have dug in their heels. It is about each of us trying to do what's right, but the upshot has to be that everybody who does it the right way needs to be free to live life as he or she sees fit.
We've talked a lot we've talked some on the show about private industry and what decisions they're going to be making about requiring employees to be vaccinated and things like that. If cases continue to rise at the rate they're rising right now, are we going to start to see a lot of private companies going, if you're not vaccinated, you're not coming to work here.
I think you probably will see a little more of it. You know, the past couple months when it's been so low, there hasn't been a real reason to sort of make those hard decisions. One thing I agree with Mike a lot that the government has done a ton. One area that I do think is worth some more discussion is the issue of masks in schools. And it is a very polarized issue, but I personally don't understand for the kids under 12 who can't get vaccinated how right now is any different than last year when they were mandated. Those kids are not protected. They cannot physically be protected. And now we're creating a situation where kids can get bullied over their decision whether they wear a mask, whether they don't wear a mask. You know, you're putting it on them to wear it and to require it. And, you know, I don't know an 8 or 9 year old who can stand up for their convictions when some kids are making fun of them for wearing their mask. Yeah. So that is the only one that I keep hearing from Hoosiers about is, you know, the kids 12 and under, if we're following CDC guidance, those people should be wearing masks. So I don't really understand why the state has backed away from the mandate on that particular situation.
Because you talk about passing the decision down, you're putting it on kids, but you're also putting it on now individual school systems to try and make that, let's be honest, unpopular choice.
And many of them, frankly, and we need to point out, are going mask optional, which is against CDC guidance.
All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, if COVID-19 cases continue to rise as the Delta variant spreads in Indiana, will state officials ever again impose statewide COVID restrictions? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, we asked if you think the U.S. Senate will approve a significant election reform bill. Just 27% of you say yes, 73% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Indiana election officials say newly released testing data is just one part of understanding COVID-19's impact on student learning last school year. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay reports the state unveiled results for its pandemic year iLearn assessments this week. And according to the data, less than 29% of students passed both the English and math portions of the test.
Damian Bedebenner is an analyst from the National Center for Assessment working with the State Department of Education. He says it's essential to look at how students' rate of learning or growth has changed during the pandemic to better understand the needs for academic recovery.
If we slow down and we just get back to the speed we normally went, we don't really catch up again.
The data shows long-standing gaps persisted among student groups during the pandemic. Many saw a downward shift in scores at similar rates, but some saw steeper declines in growth compared to others.
Nikki Kelly, we knew test scores would be bad. We've talked about it on this show. We knew test scores would be bad. But is this worse than we thought they were going to be?
Yeah, it's pretty alarming. And I got to be honest, I had more people reacting to the previous year. Like they were saying, wow, in 2019, only 37%. Like 37%. Yeah, exactly. Right. They were shocked at that one. And now we're, you know, 28 something. And so, I mean, it's definitely frustrating, especially for teachers who, you know, were put in these horrible situations and kind of just had to go with the flow and try to teach as best they can in various modalities that they had. So I am interested. They're doing some further study about how those modes of instruction might have impacted these numbers. They had schools kind of report how often they were in hybrid or in person or virtual, and be fascinated to see, you know, if you were in a certain mode, was your drop less than other modes?
Yes.
I'll be really interested. I suspect that will be a future topic on this show. John, I'll ask a similar question, I think, what I asked when we talked about the initial ISTEP scores a few weeks ago, or whatever the heck this test is called now. We knew it was going to be bad. This is really bad. But can everybody just say, oh, pandemic?
They can say that in the short term in terms of recognizing the problem and the need to fix it. What we can't do and what we have to guard against as a society is to say, oh, pandemic, and this group, this cohort, will be with an asterisk next to their names from here to the end of their lives. Yeah. We can't just say, oh, well, future employer or future admissions officer at a university, well, that's the COVID generation. if in fact we never allow those kids to catch up, shame on us. And I don't know if it was just online learning. I mean, keep in mind, neighbors and grandparents were dying. Mom and dad were on altered schedules. You know, it's the stress level which adults felt, probably even if the kids couldn't articulate it, was probably compounded because they're not really
maybe
able to discern what's going on. So even if you had great internet access, even if you could sit in front of that computer screen and soak up every bit, I'm not sure that alone would have made the difference. There's just so many other issues dealing with stress in the environment. But we've got to take care of those kids so that they don't, it'll dog them in the short term, yes, but we can't let it do it long term.
If you're the state, if you're a school superintendent telling, you know, parents about these scores, are parents going to be okay with, well, it was the pandemic, don't worry about it?
I think they will be, as long as there's a strategy and a plan going forward. And I think that's part of the reason the legislature passed, I think it was House Bill 1008, was the catch-up, the $150 million grant program. There's new grant programs coming online from the state for nonprofits and community organizations that serve these kids, particularly the ones who are going to be the most vulnerable in poor communities. But I've wondered about the same thing. You know, you wonder if, like, is a law firm going to look twice at someone that passed the open book bar exam last year, you know, for example? I mean, there's going to be a lot of, like, those types of consequences. And we'll talk, I think, a little bit about it in the next segment, too. But, you know, I said a year ago, when we were talking about shutdowns and, you know, these punitive kind of rules, we have to zoom out and understand, as we ask new questions about the Delta variant and shutting down again, do we do this or that to combat that? We had to look at the public health and the education and economic opportunity consequences. There are public health consequences to poverty. There are public health consequences to not being well educated. There are public health consequences to being forced to stay home when you have an abusive spouse. I mean, there are public health consequences to all of these decisions that were made. Whether or not, my suspicion ultimately is going to be did it pay off versus the alternative of staying open or not being as strict. And those are the questions I think we have to ask in this type of situation, and help it inform the decisions we make down the line if it happens again.
In terms of talking to parents who are understandably and obviously worried about whether their kids are at the level they need to be, mm-hmm. how much of the allaying of those fears is dependent on what comes next, in the, not just the next few years, but even the next few months?
I mean, I think a lot depends on it. You know, I am a mother of 2 school-age children, and this school year was very difficult for us. And I know for sure that my daughters are a little bit more behind than what they were last year when they entered the school year. So my concerns are definitely with how we're going to move forward as a school district, but how are we going to catch up those kids that are now going to be, at least if not a grade level behind? What does that plan look like for us? Because like everyone has said, we can blame a little bit of it on the pandemic and the fact that things were a little weird and it was hard to adjust to working at home and also having your kids at home at the same time. But we were sometimes virtual, sometimes hybrid, sometimes in person. That alone was a lot for kids to be able to deal with. So I think we have to figure out how we move forward with, if kids are going to be in school, what is the game plan to get them caught up to the grade level they need to be? Because that asterisk going to be next to their name when they decide to move on later down the line is going to be something that they're going to have to answer to, too. Are they prepared for that?
Mike kind of referenced this. Indiana set a new record in 2020, but one it didn't want. According to new data from the CDC, Indiana lost more than 2,200 Hoosiers to overdose deaths last year. WFIU's Mitch Legan reports state officials say the coronavirus pandemic and fentanyl are to blame.
Experts say lockdowns and other pandemic restrictions isolated drug users and made it difficult to get treatment. Indiana drug czar Doug Hunsinger says those social disruptions, combined with the powerful synthetic opioid fentanyl, increased Indiana's drug overdose deaths by 33%.
We're seeing fentanyl not just in opioids. We're seeing it in methamphetamines and in cocaine, and not just in our large population centers. It is very pervasive statewide.
CDC data estimate fentanyl was involved in about 70% of the state's overdose deaths.
Ariel, we heard last year during the pandemic worries that it would exacerbate the opioid crisis in multiple ways. But looking at this data, is it really fentanyl that Hoosiers should be worried about?
I think Mike touched on it when he talked about when you're in a public health crisis, it impacts so many parts of your life. And we know that addiction and mental health during the time of pandemic were heightened more than what they have been before. So I don't necessarily think that it's exactly fentanyl. We know that it is an issue in the state, but we know that obviously everyone was going through so much during the pandemic. And seeing that uprise and that uptick in the opioid addiction and just the cases that we have, we know that it's more than just the drug itself. There are a lot of factors that came into play for that. And we have lost a lot of people, not only to COVID-19, but also to addiction and to mental health lack of services. So I hope we prioritize it as a state going forward.
Yeah, another way in which we're trying to grapple with what we just went through over the last year or so. Before we leave the show, we want to send our condolences to the family of former State Representative Dan Forrestal. Forrestal was a shining star in the House of Representatives before he had to leave, unfortunately, under a cloud with his struggles with addiction. And we're very sorry to hear that he passed away this week. That is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ariel Brandy, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it, or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.